Planes powered by GE Aerospace Technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. As a new independently traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, our purpose remains: invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.
An article of impeachment against former President Donald Trump is heading to the Senate. And President Biden has put a block on the Keystone XL pipeline, what that means for the U.S. and Canada.
This hurts Canada because they don't have very many avenues for getting their oil, which is their number one export, to their biggest market in the United States.
Plus, who opens a business in the middle of a pandemic? We'll visit one block in Brooklyn. It's Friday, January 22nd. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she'll send an article of impeachment against former President Donald Trump to the Senate on Monday. But there's no agreement yet between Republicans and Democrats in the chamber on when a trial would start. In the House, 10 Republicans joined all Democrats in voting to impeach Trump, alleging he incited a mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol. A two-thirds supermajority would be needed to convict Trump in the Senate. President Biden has signed two executive orders to expand worker protections and boost COVID aid for Americans, as Congress considers Biden's $1.9 trillion aid package. Brian Deese, director of the National Economic Council, said the steps would provide a stopgap.
These actions are not a substitute for comprehensive legislative relief, but they will provide a critical lifeline to millions of families.
Our economic policy reporter Kate Davidson says the directives are designed to help agencies coordinate relief efforts and make it easier for Americans to find out what they're eligible for.
They're asking the Agriculture Department to increase by about 15% the payments that they've been making to families with children. It was a special program started during the pandemic to make sure that kids who weren't in school, kids who'd normally get free and reduced price lunches, so they have enough food to eat. And they said that this increase will just better match the true cost of those meals because those kids now have to eat at home. There's also something called Supplemental SNAP. SNAP is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or food stamp, as it's sometimes known. Those payments went up, but because of the way rules were interpreted during the Trump administration, there are about 12 million people who were basically already getting the max benefit. These are people who are really the most vulnerable, kind of lowest income, struggling households that weren't able to tap into these extra SNAP payments that were available to others during the pandemic. So they're asking the Agriculture Department to broaden their interpretation of that rule and make sure that people can get those kinds of payments.
Nearly 200 of the 26,000 members of the National Guard sent to Washington for this week's inauguration have tested positive for the coronavirus. Defense officials say all guardsmen were screened for COVID, but not all were tested. Some officials fear cramped working and resting quarters contributed to the spread. British officials say a coronavirus variant first identified in the United Kingdom could be not only more transmissible, but also more deadly. The tentative conclusion is that the new variant could boost fatality risk by 30 to 40%. Authorities say current vaccines appear to still be effective against the variant. U.S. authorities say it's likely to become the dominant strain here in the U.S. by March. In a vote of 93-2, the Senate has confirmed Lloyd Austin, a retired Army general, as defense secretary. Lloyd will be the first black secretary to run the Pentagon. He most recently led all U.S. military operations in the Middle East. And Janet Yellen's nomination to be the next Treasury Secretary has advanced to the full Senate. The Senate Finance Committee approved her nomination unanimously today. Several Republicans said they disagreed with her on policy issues, but that they hoped she'd continue to work with them in Congress. Comcast NBC Universal is shutting down its sports cable channel NBCSN at the end of the year. The network has struggled to compete against rivals ESPN and Fox Sports. Comcast says National Hockey League and NASCAR programming will move to its sister network, USA. And baseball legend and civil rights icon Hank Aaron has died at the age of 86. Hammer and Hank set many records during his 23-season career with the Milwaukee and Atlanta Braves. After surpassing a record held by Babe Ruth, Aaron's 755 homers stood as the all-time record for more than 30 years. Coming up after the break, we'll talk about President Biden's decision to cancel the Keystone XL pipeline.
Planes powered by GE Aerospace Technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. By empowering the brightest minds, GE Aerospace is reimagining engine design and advanced aircraft systems, developing hybrid electric engines and technologies compatible with alternative fuels like sustainable aviation fuel. GE Aerospace strives every day to invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.
After more than a decade of political, environmental, and regulatory wrangling, in one of his first moves in office, President Biden revoked a permit for the controversial Keystone XL pipeline. The fight over the oil pipeline, which would have carried Canadian crude to the U.S., has swung back and forth over the course of three presidential administrations. Joining me now to talk about the pipeline's history and the implications for the U.S. and Canada now that it's been canceled is Wall Street Journal reporter Vipal Manga. So, Vipal, this project has a long contested history. Can you start by reminding us how this all got started?
So Keystone XL was proposed in 2009, so it goes back 12 years. And it was proposed at a time when oil prices were approaching $150 a barrel. There's a lot of demand for oil. It was very expensive, and the Canadian industry thought this would be a great way to pump the oil to the U.S., which remains the single largest customer for Canadian crude oil. So that was the genesis of it, and it's been a long, torturous road to a pretty sad ending.
It's also been very controversial in Canada as well as here in the U.S. for environmental reasons, as well as opposition from farmers and from Native American groups. Can you explain the major concerns over the project?
So a lot of the concern stems from the fact that it's pumping Canadian oil sands crude. And a lot of people don't like it because it's very energy intensive way of pumping oil. Creates a lot of greenhouse gases. On top of that, the pipeline route would have to go over some pretty ecologically sensitive areas like Nebraska sandhills, some aquifers in the region, and the threat of a spill in any of those areas was pretty immense for the farmers and a lot of the people who use the land. So that's a lot of the reason they opposed it.
The Keystone Pipeline has also been caught up in a lot of regulatory red tape over the past 12 years, right?
Well, there's been approval processes that have had to gone through most of the red tapes on the U.S. side. In Canada, this passed muster pretty quickly after it was proposed. In the U.S., there were State Department reviews that got held up for 18 months or so. There were court cases, too, that were filed that held up reviews and reversed a lot of the approvals that were given. So in the end, the back and forth caused it to be canceled ultimately by President Obama in 2015. It was given a new lease on life by President Trump in 2017, but again started another round of court cases, challenges, regulatory hurdles in places like Nebraska and Montana. Now ultimately the final nail in the coffin.
So now that President Biden has revoked the permit for the Keystone XL pipeline, what are the economic implications for the U.S. and Canada, as well as for relations between the two countries?
Well, in Canada, they're not very happy about this, particularly because Prime Minister Trudeau had signaled to President Biden that this was going to be a key issue. They were hoping for a bit of consultation before the president made his decision, but it seemed like his mind was made up and he decided to go forward. This hurts Canada because they don't have very many avenues for getting their oil, which is their number one export, to their biggest market in the United States. So this removes one of what was going to be a major artery to get that oil. The industry is already feeling insecure in Canada. I mean, they make up 10% of Canadian GDP, and they feel like people are out to get them, that Trudeau isn't supporting them enough. So I think the long-term implications are going to be pretty heavy for the industry in Canada.
How might this impact energy prices and jobs? What are the major concerns there going forward?
Well, it's unclear if this will have a direct impact on energy prices. I mean, ultimately, it feeds into that because there's going to be less oil being pumped into the U.S. So it'll, you know, tangentially at least have some upward pressure on prices. But prices are pretty low right now anyway, just given COVID and the demand. So it's hard to see that immediate impact. In terms of jobs, TC Energy already told my colleague Tim Pucco that they were cutting 1,000 jobs. They've said, a couple of thousand jobs ultimately will be lost. Not all of those are going to be permanent jobs. A lot of it is construction jobs and whatnot. I know the labor unions had supported this project because they like the job creation bit of it. They're not very happy. And remember, they're also a very important constituency for the Democrats. So unclear this early whether this will have longer term implications for relationships between the Biden administration and the unions, but it doesn't help.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Vipal Manga. Vipal, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks. Stay safe.
And finally, we've seen many small businesses struggle financially during the pandemic. Owners have had to either strategize ways to stay afloat or completely close up shop. For the past 10 months, our reporter Peter Grant has been following businesses on Fifth Avenue in Park Slope, Brooklyn. Restaurants and bars, hardware and grocery stores, Pilates studios, and hair salons. He says that while there were closures, there have also been some surprises.
I'd be walking up and down Fifth Avenue all the time, and there'd be a sign in the window of a business that was coming, or there'd be permits in the window saying that there's a construction permit and they're going to be opening a new establishment. And that's when we began to think, this has got to be a story. Who opens a business in the middle of a pandemic? And the answer is actually quite a lot of people. So at this point, there have been almost an equal number of openings to closings.
You can listen to the stories of the entrepreneurs who started or expanded their businesses during the pandemic on today's episode of our sister podcast, The Journal. And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Mark Stewart. The show was produced this week by Trine Nori and Sam Westren, with help from Paolo Bossanen, Keith Collins, Jenny Ang, Casey Georgie, Kateri Yoakum, Amanda Llewellyn, Charlie Turner, J.R. Whalen, and Chris Sinsley. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.
Planes powered by GE Aerospace technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. As a new independently traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, our purpose remains: invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.